You know too much.
No, I just worked the same tape recorder.
So I also saw in the Calyx that you were in Troubadours.
Yeah. I don't know why. Yeah, I did a lot of plays for the Troubadours. I did Summer Stock one summer at Colonial Williamsburg in the Common Glory. When was that? 55. And I did male roles at a lot of the women's colleges. I enjoyed it enormously. And to be crude about it, it's a great way to meet attractive young women, which I think was my true motivation, but what the heck.
So who ran Troubadours then?
Oh, I have no idea.
Were there no professors who were important to you outside of journalism?
Nope.
Nobody?
Some
out?
I enjoyed. Yeah, Dr. Shelley, he taught me ancient Greek and was one of the more delightful men I've ever known in my entire life, with his wild, crazy sense of humor. But I only took that for 1 year to replace a math course. No, the rest of the people were perfectly nice and Lord knows, better than competent. But basically, I was here for journalism, and that's what I studied. I took the minimum number of non-required courses. And any free period I had, I put a journalism course in.
So you felt when you got out there in the real world that you were well prepared?
Oh, yeah. I knew journalism, I knew Civil War history, I knew freshman geology. Had not studied economics at all, which made it hysterically funny when I started specializing in economics in 1980. Good background in history because I always liked the subject. Never studied political science, never studied commerce, any kind. Didn't study math, never took science courses beyond freshman geology, which was all doable in those days. I'm not sure you can do it anymore. I'll have to ask and find out.
And you were in what we were talking about coming
ROTC,
down?
ROTC?
Sure.
Yeah, it would have been silly for me not to be. I mean, I already knew it. And ROTC paid $27 a month to juniors and seniors. So you did 2 years for free, and then you started getting paid. And, I mean, it's one more source of income for me, and no work of any kind. Because I had been doing this stuff for 9 years. I would go in class and sort of sleep and answer the questions when asked and collect my $27 and go teach other kids to march because they didn't know how, and I did. And it was really fairly simple. And then I got, you know, I was commissioned as a second lieutenant, did 2 years and 1 month in the Army, and got out and went back to work.
And did a lot of people participate in ROTC?
Yeah, it was a reasonably large organization. You've got to remember, the Korean War armistice was in 53. There was no guarantee that was going to hold. We'd been, you know, from 39 to 45, World War II had gone on. We joined in 41. In 50 to 53, the Korean War, we figured pretty sure there was going to be another one. And if you had to go, you might as well go as an officer, and you could go to the officer's club and not have to run around in the mud and the muck all the time. And, that was the motivation for that. If you had to go, go as something. And then they had so many second lieutenants right after that because they began to demobilize the Korean War troops. That Jerry Hopkins, my roommate, did 6 months in U.S. Army intelligence, and that was satisfied his requirement for his 2 years of service. And they needed an information specialist, and I were one, so I got to go to the Mojave Desert of California after my training at Fort Knox. 1,000 square miles of desert, the largest military post in the free world. I had 1,100 people in the permanent party. And an officer's club built of native stone by Italian stonemasons who were prisoners of war and held in the desert during World War II. And the commanding general's home was built the same way. They were the only permanent buildings on the post. I lived in, my wife and I and two children lived in a migrant workers' federal housing shed that had been transported overland from the San Fernando Valley on the back of a flatbed truck and put down on four concrete feet that had been poured into the sand. Mm-hmm. It was 20 feet by 12 feet. 2 8-by-12 rooms on either end, and a little living room, dining room, kitchen, bathroom. The bathroom was 2 feet by 4 feet in the middle.
Kind of moved around carefully. Huh?
Well, if you sat on the toilet, you couldn't close the door. And we bathed our two kids by putting a galvanized tub in the shower and then filling it with water and then putting the kids in the galvanized tub. No bathtub. I mean, clearly, 2 by 4, no bathtub.
Well, speaking of living conditions, where did you live when you were here?
Freshman dorm. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Davis's rooming house, which was then on South Main Street. I have no idea what it is now, although I did notice there are some rooming houses still out there. And then the fraternity house, junior and senior year. And the senior year, because I was the president, I got to, you know, pick my own room, mm-hmm. which, of course, I took the biggest room. Right.
So you lived in a rooming house?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Did she rent out each
room? She rented out rooms. And Jake Lemon and I lived on the third floor, and we shared a bathroom. And Jake was, he's good to have around. He was a returning Air Force vet, dead serious about getting his education because he had seen what the world gave you if you only had a high school diploma, and he wanted more than that. Mm-hmm. So he was damn good for study habits because on Saturday night you could count on Jake for anything you wanted to go do. But Sunday through Friday, he was going to study. So you just got in the habit because if you made noise, Jake was bigger than me and would come over and persuade me that I wanted to stop doing that. So I just studied and typed the papers and beat stories and things.
Did you have any relationship with law students?
Only
you were typing their papers.
Typing their papers?
Did you socialize with them at all?
No, they weren't going to socialize with an undergraduate. You know, I was a convenient secretary that they paid money to do their bidding. They had no desire to socialize with me, nor I with them.
But they were right there.
Although Charlie McDonald's father was a professor in those days and had just written a book about Kentucky, as I remember. And he was a lot of fun. But I met him because of Charlie, not because of me.
No, you weren't classmates with Charlie.
Oh, God, no. But he, because of the Barclay thing, when he wrote the column, he stayed in touch with me.
Oh.
Quite often when I go to Washington, I call and see if he wants to go have a drink. You know, if he's not tied up, he will. I love him because he's got the world's funniest voice.
He does, doesn't he? He was one of the first interviews I did. I was just totally charmed by him.
He's just wonderful. He just doesn't care. He's
yeah, he's a classic. And I don't know anybody else in Rockbridge County who sounds like him. I don't know where that accent came from.
Nor do I. The only other person I know who came close was a guy named John Patterson, who was in news at WDVJ and later was the assistant dean of the Graduate School of Journalism at Columbia and a winner of a CBS fellowship. But he was this brilliant reporter on television with a voice very close to Charlie's.
Hmm.
And he was smart enough to know that he had a very short and limited career if he stayed on the air and that he'd better do something else. But a great reporter, really good reporter.
So did you form friendships with people in Lexington?
Yeah. Kitty Bishop was the actress. She's still here. And she and Lamar Bishop, her husband, I got to know Kitty first and got to know Lamar, and he ran the footlong hot dog place and the beer place on Main Street near the Lyric Theater. It's not there anymore. But if you look at the Lyric Theater, to the left there was a parking lot, and the next building was the foot-long hot dog joint, and then next door to that, his father's beer hall. It had been one building, and they put a partition down the middle so that the foot-long hot dog joint was about 7 feet wide, and so was the beer hall. And Lamar was, unless he's died, because I haven't heard from him in years, eventually became bred quarter horses. Did very well at it, indeed. Won a lot of championships. And I'd go hang out when I could at the foot-long hot dog joint. I had my first ever raw oyster there. Because Lamar...
At a hot dog joint?
Yeah, Lamar liked them, so he got some. And he said, come on, we'll have a beer and some oysters. And I said, what are oysters? Now, this is from a kid who was born on the Chesapeake Bay, but I didn't grow up there. And he said, it won't kill you. If you stop and look at the things, they really are disgusting looking. Who was it that said it was a brave man who first ate an oyster? And I knew exactly what he was talking about. But he put some lemon juice and some Tabasco. And then you just slide. He said, for God's sake, don't chew.
Just swallow.
So it was good. I liked it. So beer and oysters. I guess he was the only person in town I knew, other than Matthew Paxton and his father, but they were my boss and the owner. I was really not going to socialize with the hired help. And the other time I was working. So I never got to meet many people. If they weren't, in my sort of limited little sphere, I wasn't out wandering around. I knew Doc from Doc's Corner Store, but that was because he'd run into me. We had this little traffic accident that was Doc's fault, so he was nice to me after that. And I knew Jabbo just because you couldn't be here and not know Jabbo. He sold all the kegs that were sold in town.
I want to know more about Jabbo.
Huge fat man with glasses who sat on a stool in his joint and sold draft beer at the bar and kegs for weekend parties.
Was Jabbo black or was Jabbo white?
White. There were no black people in Lexington in those days. I don't think I ever saw one. Certainly not as merchants.
Who made your bed in the fraternity house?
Me. We had a black chef. And Mrs. Jordan, who was our, I think they're called house mothers or whatever they are called, fraternity mothers. They spent 2 years in despair because he said the only way he knew how to cook was with lard. He didn't know how to use butter or anything that was, or oil that might actually be moderately healthy. So everything was cooked in lard because that was the only way he knew how to cook. But he was very good and he could turn out the right number of dinners very, very quickly. So Mrs. Jordan could just stay in despair because we couldn't replace him. But we didn't, we had a cleaning service. Of course, they came when I was in school. But Jerry and I made our own beds because we locked our door when we left. We owned typewriters, valuable commodity in 1957. And getting to be valuable now because there are none of them.
So you locked your door?
Mm-hmm.
Even with the honor system?
The honor system for a fraternity house, it's almost the last building on what we call, in what we called North Roanoke, was not the safest place for material to be. We weren't worried about the students. But when people would come in from Roanoke intent on doing harm, guess which was the first fraternity house? Mm-hmm. And we learned, the hard way that locking the door was a really swell idea. And otherwise, we'd leave all the typewriters in the journalism lab. That was open 24 hours a day, so people could go there and type. And I don't think they ever had any trouble because there was almost always somebody in there. Another 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because we did the radio news broadcast every night from there. think it was just one a day. That was when the first time I ever broke up on the air, because Philippe Lebrun, for reasons that I will never understand, had decided he wanted to do sports one night. And he was reporting on the score of the game that had been won by the Baltimore Orioles. And that's where I lost it. Never got it back.
So, were you and Philippe were buddies?
Yeah. We've seen each other a couple of times since then, usually at Tom Riegel's house. But they're just, well, you were buddies with everybody who was in journalism school. Weren't that many of us. I mean, I had one class where there were just eight. And the ordinary class was no more than 10. Just not that many people. Jeb Rosebrook, I don't know if he was a journalism major or just came over to take the writing courses. But he's been in Hollywood for 30 years, knocking out film scripts. So he must have learned something. I wonder if he took the motion picture and television.
Well, you wouldn't know, would you? You weren't there.
No, I was there for a couple of classes. And then Jerry was in the class. John Hamm, who went on to, is retired now, but spent, I've forgotten the name of it, but someplace in New England, he was started off as a history teacher at a rather posh boys' school, which is now a boys' and girls' school, and got up to assistant headmaster and loved it. Thought it was just wonderful for him. Never figured that one out. Carl Barnes wasn't a journalism student, but he took a couple of writing classes, and the last I heard of him, he was a professor of fine arts at Wayne State, outside of Detroit. And the other guys I just lost track of, except for Mike Norell, who was in the class of 59, and he's an actor and writer in Hollywood. He and Jeb, and when Jerry lived there, the three of them would get together quite often and call and say, why don't you fly out? And I'd say, about $3,000 worth of reasons. You guys get in your cars and drive 6 miles and you're all together. It's 3,000 miles from me. Jerry left there, and last I heard of him, he was living in Bangkok. A friend of mine was the ambassador, so I got the two of them together. I doubt they hit it off, because the ambassador, who is now retired, I met him at the Paris Peace Talks in 72, Foreign Service officer. Very conservative, and as is required of an FSO, very correct. You know, and Jerry is not conservative and is not correct.
Well, it was probably a quick evening for them. So, through the years, you've mentioned reunions. Mm-hmm. You've come back to Washington and Lee.
Come back to two of them.
Which ones?
25th and another. I can't remember whether it's 30 or 35. Uh-huh. And I will be in place for 40 in May.
Uh-huh. And?
No, I'm sorry, three of them. I came back for my 10th.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Yeah. It took 10 years to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And then it took another 15 years to come back.
Yeah, because at the 10th year, I remembered why I hadn't come back for the five. A goodly number of the people I went to school with were pretentious assholes. And I couldn't see any real reason that I would want to be with them. As years pass, you both moderate your own opinion and they moderate some of their behavior, and it becomes much more acceptable.
So by the 25th?
Perfectly reasonable people.
And what do you think they thought of you?
I don't know. Never cared. I didn't care when I was here, and I don't care now. I stopped caring about it. I stopped caring about what they were, because it suddenly occurred to me that they were being perfectly happy and I was making myself upset.
Yes.
It really was terribly stupid. So I just stopped and figured they can be what they want to be, and I'll mind my own business. Talked to Tom and some of the other people, Pax, until he died. and always go see Frank.
Which pleases him no end.
And Helen was. She was the secretary in the news bureau when I was the student assistant. She married Dr. Watts, and I can't remember his first name to save my life.
Bill Watts?
Bill Watts, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can't see them because they are gone to Turkey. I hope they'll be back sometime during the year, but I always tried to find them. And until Lamar and Kitty Bishop split up, I'd always try to find them. I still look up Kitty, but Lamar is somewhere.
So, the 25th reunion, what do you think of the whole reunion process here?
I don't know. I've never known that it did a whole heck of a lot of good, but it seems to, so obviously I'm wrong. I have never, I've never really enjoyed looking back at things. I'm much more interested in what's going to happen than what has already happened. I guess it's part of being a reporter. You know, that story's done. Time to move on to the next story. They're fun. I mean, in their own limited way. If you said, would you like to come to a reunion every year? The answer would be hell no, not under any circumstance. But occasionally they're fun.
And now you're back as a professor.
Mm-hmm.
How's that?
You mean, how did it come about, or how is it so far? What? Came about because in 93-94 I was invited to be a visiting professor at Jacksonville State University in Alabama, but visiting there meant really visiting. You went in for 4 or 5 days a month. I worked with kids in writing and communication and things like that. Worked with the college administration on quality management systems. And I enjoyed it. I liked it. And then a young writer, a female, who was my second son's girlfriend for a couple of years, and I stayed in touch with her because we both write, heard that Washington and Lee was looking for a one-year professor. And she heard it from a guy at the University of South Carolina when she was looking for something. So she called and said, your alma mater needs a professor, why don't you call? So I came up to see Ham Smith, and it worked out. It's sort of semi-funny because it's a print professorship for 1 year. And while my background is principally in broadcasting, it didn't scare me because I've written 2 books and magazine articles and newspaper stories. So I figured I could get by that no matter what. Read the textbook the night before they do. I'm one up, and I've got experience. And so far it's worked out fine. I got to create 1 course on my own because the 2 that I needed to teach for Brian Richardson when he was in Oxford, his 3rd course was one he created on his own, as I understand. I got to put together a long-form reporting class to show you how to write books, magazine articles, television news magazine programs, and television documentaries. I've got 8 very bright students in that one. I mean, they keep asking questions, and I'm not really sure about the answers. But I've got them fooled so far. And there's a basic writing class that is simply a matter of making them write over and over and over again, and helping them and showing them how they've made mistakes. And then a beats class, the old beats reporting class that I was in, where you go out and cover city, county government, the cops, courts, you know, the stuff you cover. And then I, in effect, become the managing editor. And, just keep them on track, make them turn it in on time. And just, there is a student editor who works with them as the assignment editor because she's taking editing class with Ham Smith. And it's fun so far. Now, I haven't gotten into much social life because I'm trying to get moved into my apartment and, you know, get set up. And Tim and Mary Lee Hickman, he runs the production studio here in town. He used to work for me as a cameraman in Portsmouth in the 60s. So we've been together a couple of times. And Sunday I'm going hiking with Ham and his wife, because I enjoy hiking. I guess that's it. I really haven't done much yet. And one club meeting. What's it called? That club. 20-some professors and other people. Basically professors. And they meet once a month and present papers on subjects that they do not teach. So they have to go out and do research and do that stuff. And the one last Monday night was a chapter from Tom Riegel's memoirs. Really, when he first got to Paris. Really very interesting, because it's back in the 20s. Stuff I never knew before. But I imagine I will get into the, you know, social life sooner or later.
It's a pretty social town.
It seems to be. I am, as usual, working on 47 things simultaneously, so I don't know how much of it I'll be able to get into, but I'm going to find time to do some of it.
Well, shall we round off this interview?
Why not?
Any final things you want to say about
Particularly want to say those, but you asked the question, so I answered them.
Well, you were very kind to put up with my questions.
Oh, I don't mind that. I've made a living all my life asking questions. I can hardly claim to be above it now.
Well, thank you, Lloyd. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.